You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. This is the first time I have done this particular show without a co-host. I am flying solo today. Now, if you are a new listener, and the truth is, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a new listener because we are not that far into having a lot of shows yet. So thank you for being a new listener. But for those who are uninitiated, who don't know what the show is about, this is a show all about liberty, about freedom, and we are the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. So we talk about all things libertarian, and this show is really a one-off. This one might go a little bit shorter than normal, and honestly, what it is somebody posted something interesting on my Facebook page. If you want to check me out on Facebook, it's Tyus. It's facebook.com/ Tyus France, I guess. facebook.com/TyusFrance. You can find me there. And I do post a lot of libertarian thoughts and libertarian leaning ideas. And occasionally people engage me that have different views, which I got to tell you, I really, really appreciate. You know, there's nothing that I can value greater than that of the First Amendment, really the Bill of Rights in general, but the First Amendment being the big one, which is everyone gets to have their say, you know, freedom of speech. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so anyway, somebody posted on my page after a post that I wrote up a post about the difference between communism and socialism, which I think there's a lot of similarities. In fact, I would say one's kind of the father of another. And a gentleman named Tim, who often engages with me, he definitely is on the socialist side of things. He kind of wrote back to me, and I want to read his post, and then we're going to kind of reply to it on a step-by-step thing, because he asked 10 questions. And those 10 questions, I was like, man, if I write a response here, this is going to take me a really long time, so I might as well just record a show in reply to him, and maybe some people will find some value in understanding how this, what I consider, I think it's spin, I think it's a way of framing this to make anything that is not socialist look terrible. So I think it's worth going over. I'm just going to read these questions to you. So he says, answer these questions. Number one, do you believe that everyone should be taken care of when they're ill, irrespective of their financial situation? Question number two, do you believe that someone working all week should be able to raise a family, live in safe accommodations, and be able to buy food, afford a holiday, etc.? Three, do you believe that people with disabilities should be looked after and special needs catered for to integrate them into the rest of society without making them feel like an outsider? Four, do you believe that to enable people to find a job that they not only love but do with a passion should be encouraged, taught, and financially supported to do so? Number five, do you believe that people who have worked most of their lives deserve to spend their twilight years in peace and prosperity? So those are the first five questions, which I think are definitely framed in a sense to make socialism sound really great without really looking at the ramifications or what that stuff means. Then the next five questions are kind of framed to make anything that is capitalistic sound awful. So these are the next, this is questions 6 through 10. Do you believe that you get to keep everything you earn? Question mark. Do you believe paying tax is optional and any legal means of avoiding it is okay? Eight, do you believe it is okay to hoard resources so that others have to pay a premium? Question number nine, do you believe that making a personal profit from things like energy, water, land, pharmaceuticals is just the way things are? Question number 10, do you believe that individuals have a monetary value and can be treated and traded as headcount? And then he said, if you answered yes to these, please tell me why, regarding the last five questions. So I figured I would take these questions in order and just kind of dissect them, take them apart, because there's a lot of bad thinking in these questions. And like I said earlier, they're framed in a negative way to make capitalism sound bad and socialism sound good without really showing why. So let's go with question number one. Do you believe that everyone should be taken care of when they're ill, irrespective of their financial situation? Well, the answer, of course, is yes. Of course I want everybody to be taken care of. The real question here is how. How is the important question? This is similar to, like, do you want everybody to be a millionaire? Well, yes. Yes, I do. I want everybody to be a millionaire. Do you want everybody to have everything they've ever desired? Yes. Yes, I do. Well, how? How is the real question? Because if you're talking about the socialistic view of this or the communistic view of this, it involves having other people do labor so that everybody stays as equal as possible. And that covers healthcare, right? So one answer, which I think this would be the answer he would recommend, is that of those who pay taxes, that part of those taxes is used to help fund other people's healthcare, right? So in another way of looking at that, you're going to take from people, you're going to steal from people, and give to other people. Now, that sounds like Robin Hood, unless you're the person being stolen from. And if you're the taxpayer, that is exactly who we're talking about being stolen from. So when I say yes, I want everybody to be taken care of for healthcare, regardless of their financial situation, and it comes down to the how are we going to do it, the first answer I've got is, well, private charities is a great way to handle this because it's voluntary. Taxes are involuntary. You're forcing to take money from somebody else without their consent. But if it's a private charity, well, that's fantastic. Then people are doing it voluntarily, goodwill, everything's fine. You're not violating anybody's natural rights. If you are taking from somebody, you are violating their natural rights, their right to property. So another way you could deal with this is doctors that volunteer. There are plenty of wealthy doctors out there. In fact, Ron Paul is a doctor that has volunteered many, many times and doesn't turn anybody away from his practice. So there's an example of a doctor that would volunteer his time to take care of those who don't necessarily have the finances to handle it themselves. Now, I also think a way of dealing with this is to lower the prices of healthcare, and the way to do that is through competition and reducing regulations. So, for example, if you are the very best doctor in Turkey, in Chile, in China, in Canada, in Mexico, you're not allowed to practice medicine here in the United States. You have to get your medical license in the U.S. So, we're using regulation to keep these doctors out. These doctors, if they could practice medicine in the U.S., they would be competing with our doctors, which would drive the price down. And as that price gets driven down, more people would be able to afford healthcare. There's also a tremendous approval process for things like pharmaceutical drugs. If those restrictions were removed, then suddenly people would be able to buy pharmaceutical drugs at a dramatically reduced price because the regulatory costs of getting these things approved would be reduced. So those are just a couple of ways of handling it. Another example of this is if you look at the EpiPen. The EpiPen is very, very simple. It's basically just a syringe. It takes no training whatsoever, very little training to use. You basically take the cap off and stab yourself with it, and it injects epinephrine, I believe, essentially adrenaline, into your system. Very, very simple. I believe it cost originally around $100, which is a lot for a syringe, but that price over time has gone up 600%. Now, nothing was improved about this product. In fact, the price of the goods that made it went down over time because those things became more accessible. So why did the price of this product go up? Well, this is a product that was covered by insurance, and that insurance was often handled by government, and all of these restrictions and subsidies were dealt with the government. Now, look at on another type of medical treatment, which is laser eye surgery. This is something that is not covered by insurance. This is something that requires tremendous training. It involves really, really sophisticated technology. And the price of laser eye surgery when it came out was incredibly expensive. But over time, it has reduced and gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. It went from thousands of dollars per eye to hundreds of dollars per eye. And it did it without having insurance around it, without having all of those regulations put on top of it, because really insurance wasn't covering it. So that's a way, if you see when you take these government entities out of the way, these prices drop. When you introduce them back into the system, these prices increase dramatically. And when I say insurance, this stuff, this health insurance, this Obamacare is not Affordable Health Care Act, sorry, it's called the Affordable Health Care Act. It's really not insurance. Insurance is put in place to cover things that are really unexpected, a tornado, a car accident, things that you're not expecting. If every single person has insurance to cover their basic needs, it's suddenly not insurance anymore. It's just a tax that you're then charging everybody to pay for healthcare. It's not insurance. Insurance is something that covers the unexpected. If you're getting something to cover your routine treatments, if you're getting something to cover your checkups, your regular checkups, well, that's not insurance. You're just paying for it in a different way. And when you're requiring insurance companies to cover all of the exact same things, you're reducing their ability to compete with each other. Again, forcing a monopoly, it's essentially a government-created monopoly. If, however, an insurance company said, you know what, we don't want to have to cover X, Y, and Z. Let's say this guy doesn't have any heart conditions, so he doesn't want to get an insurance that covers heart attacks. Well, he would be allowed to do that if the government didn't say the insurance has to cover that. If it said it doesn't have to cover birth control, if that person doesn't want birth control, they wouldn't have to pay for it. They could lower the cost for themselves. So these are all ways that deregulating it can help reduce price, which makes it suddenly more accessible to people in varying, challenging financial situations who need healthcare. Okay, let's move on to the second question. The second question is, do you believe that someone working all week should be able to raise a family, live in safe accommodations, and be able to buy food, afford a holiday, vacation, etc.? The answer is maybe. I mean, that depends. As far as what they can afford, that comes down to two things, which is how much money are they making, and what are they trying to buy? And how much money they're making is really not a statement of, oh, they're a human being, so they deserve to make X amount of money. It comes down to how much value they're producing. So if, for example, a doctor produces a great deal of value to other people, they pay him a lot. If somebody who mows the lawn is producing less value, they are paid less money. If somebody creates a business, which creates jobs, and maybe it's a restaurant, so it creates food that other people really love, well, they're creating greater value for the community, and they get more money. So as far as how much they make, well, that comes down to how much they produce. What kind of great ideas are they bringing to the table? What kind of fantastic systems or labor do they bring to the table? As far as should they be able to afford a great vacation? What kind of vacation? What are we talking about here? I don't mind having a staycation here in Vegas, but if you're talking about these vacations that Donald Trump is taking where they're $20 million or something crazy like that, no, not everybody should be able to afford that. That's absolutely insane. Should they be able to afford a large house? Well, I don't know. If the house is really expensive in downtown Hollywood, no, probably not. I mean, it's just not reasonable for every single person to be able to afford something like that. Should they be able to afford having a family? Well, maybe, but it depends on what kind of family are we talking about here. Should they be able to afford having 10 kids? Well, that's a really expensive thing to have, especially if you're doing it responsibly. So the answer to this question is maybe, I don't know, it depends. There's a lot of variables, but to say that every single person deserves to be able to take vacation, let's say they aren't doing anything to help society, they aren't producing anything, they're unemployed, they're a burden to others who are paying for them, then no, I don't think they deserve to be able to buy a very large house, have 10 kids, and go on $20 million vacations. And I don't think that's unreasonable. Okay, number three. Do you believe that people with disabilities should be looked after and special needs catered for to integrate them into the rest of society without making them feel like an outsider? Okay, so the answer to this is no, and I know that's probably going to surprise a lot of people, or some people, because the question is framed, you say, like, well, do you want people with disabilities to be viewed as an outsider? And of course I don't want them to be viewed as an outsider, but if you're talking about catering to these people in a different way than you'd cater to other people, then you're essentially discriminating against them. If you're saying, you know what, these people with special needs, with different abilities, we need to take care of them in a different way than we take care of every other person on the planet, well, then you're essentially discriminating against them. You're saying they're not good enough to be treated like everybody else. And we've done this in many ways. Like, what if I were to say the exact same thing about women? Well, you know what? Women should be paid a little bit more because they're just not as productive as men. That's pretty sexist, right? What if I were to say the same thing about short people? Well, you know what? I'm 5'9", but there's people that are significantly taller than me. If I wanted to be a basketball player, do I deserve to have special shoes given to me or stilts or something so that I can compete at the same level as people that are taller than me? At what level, at what point do you start treating people equally? And really the only way to treat them equally is to start by just treating them equally. If I'm incentivizing somebody for being different than everybody else, then I'm actually discriminating against that person. So no, the answer is no. I don't think that you should discriminate against people. And I think that what this question is doing is hiding the idea that says, yeah, you should be able to discriminate against them. And based off of that discrimination, they're going to need help. They need support because they're not a full person. They can't take care of themselves. Now, I understand there might be people that can't take care of themselves. And we can go back to question number one, where I can say, yeah, charities and other organizations can help them as long as it's on a voluntary basis. But the idea to say, well, no, they're just not good enough. They're not whole people. And because they're not whole people, everybody has to take care of them. Well, that is pretty condescending, isn't it? Let's move on to question number four. Do you believe that to enable people to find a job that they do not love, but do with a passion, should be encouraged? Yes. Taught and financially supported to do so? Okay. Should they be encouraged? Yes, of course they should be encouraged to have a great job that they love to do and want to do. Should they be taught? Well, that's a good question. If you're talking about like on-the-job training, sure, that's a great thing. I'm not saying it should be required, but it's a great thing. Now, financially supported. Why would they need to be financially supported? If this is a job, and by that definition, I would assume it is something that is giving the rest of society value. Why would the rest of society need to pay somebody to do something that is supposed to bring the rest of society value? Let's go back to the restaurant. If I open up a great restaurant, you pay me for the food. That's how I'm financially supported. I provide a good or service to you, and you pay me for that good or service. Now, if you're paying me money without me providing a good or service, well, that doesn't make any sense. Then it's not really a job. It's just charity. It's welfare at that point. So that part of the question just doesn't make sense. Why would you say they need to be financially supported? That doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, number five. Do you believe that people who have worked most of their lives deserve to spend their twilight years in peace and prosperity? Well, prosperity is a slippery word there because that could have a lot of meanings. Do I want them all to be millionaires? Absolutely. I don't see a way of doing that, but sure, I'd love that. That sounds great. Peace? Well, that's also kind of slippery. What would you define as peace? Isn't that variable for each person? For some people, peace might be they have to live in a house in the hills of Montana. But for other people, peace might just be living near their family. So both of these words leave a lot of wiggle room. Now, if you're implying that people should be paying for the elderly, if you're implying that about welfare, if you're implying that Social Security is what needs to be providing the prosperity for the elderly, well, again, I would refer you to my previous thing about disabled. Aren't you discriminating against the elderly? Aren't you saying that the elderly can't support themselves? Or are you just saying, well, I really support this Ponzi scheme that is unsustainable and the basic economics have shown that it won't last and won't work over time? The truth is, if each person were to know that they had their own retirement, that they were in charge of their own retirement, they'd set up their own 401ks or Roth IRAs, which have been shown and proven to provide better returns on your investment than the Social Security program, which, by the way, there is no money in the Social Security program. People are taking out much less than what they put in, so it's a waste. It's a bad program. I do want people to live in peace and prosperity. Whatever that means to them, I just think they need to be the ones that earn that over time, or that people need to voluntarily provide them that. It shouldn't be stolen from somebody else to provide that to them. Okay, let's move on to the other questions, which were 6 through 10. These were the ones that kind of made capitalism look a little bit bad, I guess, or that was the intent, I believe. So number 6, do you believe that you get to keep everything you earn? Well, I do believe in property rights. I believe that property rights is one of those basic natural rights, life, liberty, and property, that each person, that if you own your own body, then you own your labor, right? And if you own your labor, then you should have the fruits of your labor should be yours. You should own the fruits of your labor. And to say that, well, if I'm not allowed to keep everything, if I'm being taxed, if that's being taken from me, then you're saying that you really don't own your labor. And if you don't own your labor, then you really don't own yourself. And if you don't own yourself, well, then you're probably a slave to whoever is using your labor for their benefit, which in this case would be a government. So if a government is taxing you and taking from you, let's say they're taking 100% from you. Isn't that slavery? If you're working and 100% of your labor goes to the government, that's slavery, right? So if 50% goes to the government, are you only half a slave? What about 30%? A third a slave? So no, I think that you deserve to own whatever you produce, or you should have the right to sell that to somebody else, or exchange it for money or whatever you want to do. But if you're suggesting that you don't deserve to keep everything that you earn, well, then I would say that you are either in favor, you're encouraging slavery, or you are encouraging theft by others. Question 7, do you believe paying taxes is optional and any legal means of avoiding it is okay? Okay, so first off, I think the government says that any legal means of avoiding taxes is okay. So there's tax avoidance and tax evasion. So avoidance is completely legal. You don't have to pay taxes that you don't owe. So yeah, I think that not only do I think that's okay, but the laws think that's okay. Income tax wasn't even started until 1913. So up until about 100 years ago, we never even had income tax. This country did really, really well without charging an income tax. So do I believe that paying taxes is optional? Well, legally, it's not optional. Ethically, I think it should never be put in place at all. The government's nothing but a large organization. It's a big company. The difference between a government and basically any other company is two things. One is that any other company, if they want to charge you for something, you have the right to pay for it or to not pay for it, while a government forces that upon you. And the other thing that makes a government unique is they have that use of force. It's often referred to as a monopoly on force. So those are really the only two things that make a government unique. If a company came up to me and said, well, you have to pay us, well, then I could say no. If a government comes up to me and says, you have to pay us, if I choose not to, they'll lock me in a box. If I refuse to get in that box, they'll probably shoot me in trying to get me into that box. Or if I tried to escape, they'd shoot me. So yeah, I don't think that taxes is about freedom at all. And I think that it's unethical. And I think that it's immoral. Currently, it is legal, but I think avoiding it is okay. So that's my answer. Number 8, do you believe it is okay to hoard resources so that others have to pay a premium? Man, what a trap of a question. Do I believe it is okay to hoard resources? Well, if I own those resources, I should be able to keep whatever I want. I think that this is framed around the idea that rich people will take all of their money and just hoard all their money. But that's really not true. That's not what rich people do. What rich people do with their money is they invest it in other things. Often those things are houses or into other businesses through things like the stock market, or stocks and bonds, right? So they're taking their money and they are giving it to other companies to help those companies grow, or they're putting it into homes so that people have places to live. So that's kind of the most positive side, but let me try and fall into your trap a little bit further here. Even if that wasn't the case, I think if somebody owns whatever they own, yeah, they should have the right to do it. And here's what ends up happening economically. Let's say I buy all of the computer hard drives in the world, right? And I'm doing that so that others would have to pay a premium, which I don't understand why I'd do that, but you know what? I guess De Beers kind of does that with diamonds, you know? So I hoard all these hard drives. What does that do? Well, the price of hard drives would go up. And you know what else would happen? Production would go up because prices went up. So other people are going to want to compete against me. They're going to want to produce as many hard drives as possible. They're going to flood the market, which eventually will lower prices of hard drives. And now me hoarding the hard drives makes no sense. Now I've just essentially worked myself out of business. Now there is a situation where this is a good strategy, and that specifically is when you have a monopoly. So if the government is preventing other people, other companies, from getting in on something, so let's say it is cable internet, right? It's very, very hard to start a cable internet company because of government regulations. So in that situation, I could hoard that and I could raise the prices, and there's really nothing anybody could do because the government is letting me be a monopoly. It's letting me be the only player in town. Now, if the government said, you know what, anybody can start a cable company and I raise my prices, somebody else could come out there and compete with me. So the only time these monopolies are really there is when a government is creating the regulation or reducing the freedom of other companies to compete. But in general, I think people deserve to be able to do whatever they want with their own property that is theirs to own. Okay, number 9. Do you believe that making a personal profit from things like energy, water, land, pharmaceuticals is just the way things are? Okay, pharmaceuticals, land. Okay, so what creates value is scarcity. A lot of people think that what creates value is invention. They think, oh, if I invented something, then that I deserve everything from that. Well, the truth is, there's a lot of things that people can invent, but it doesn't. There's no scarcity of that good, right? There needs to be a demand. There needs to be a supply. And if there is an unlimited supply, then there's no reason for there to be a high price. So let's say that overnight, suddenly, we have so much food on this planet. It's everywhere. We can't get rid of the food. In fact, it's almost a burden having so much food. Suddenly, the price of food goes down everywhere, right? Scarcity is what creates a value. So when you're talking about things like energy, water, land, or medicine, yeah, there's a limited supply of these things. I mean, water is more of a distribution issue. Oftentimes, pharmaceuticals could be. Land, there is a limited supply of land. We have more than we think, and a lot of it is actually it's being held by the government as public land that you're not allowed to use for anything, and people can't sell. Other land, like Indian reservations, is being held in trust, so they're not allowed to sell their land. But in general, land is a limited resource, and so yes, there's value to it. Energy has tremendous value, and those who can harvest it, who can generate it, and who can distribute it efficiently, yeah, they get to make the most money off of that energy. But there's also nothing stopping somebody else, short of government regulations, from preventing you from going out there and creating your own energy company and profiting from it. In fact, we're getting closer to that with all these solar panels, and you're seeing regulations starting to pop up about solar panels, specifically because they're trying to create these monopolies for energy companies. We saw one happen here in Nevada recently. So what about the last question, which is, do you believe that individuals have a monetary value and can be treated and traded as headcount? Well, the answer is no. As I mentioned earlier with natural rights, the right to life is a natural right. So life, liberty, property, those are the big three, right? And if life is a natural right, then it is something that nobody can take from you, or nobody should be allowed to take from you. That would be violating your rights if they took that from you. So to say, oh, you should be able to trade a person, no, that's incredibly unethical to me. Now, what I think you're actually getting at is, do people have a production value? And the answer to that is yes. Certain people produce greater value to society than other people, and they're often paid in accordance with that. So if somebody is a fantastic teacher, they are paid for their services. If somebody is a terrible, terrible dentist, they're still paid for their services, but maybe not as much as the great dentist that is down the street. They can't charge as much. So anyways, do I think that people are nothing but a monetary value or should be traded as headcount? Of course not. That is a silly, silly question. I thank you, Tim, for posing these questions. I think they were posed in a pretty ridiculous way to make socialism look great and capitalism look bad. And the truth is, from what I can understand, socialism is just a hop, skip, and a jump away from communism. We've seen exactly what communism does with the Soviet Union, with Venezuela. We know what road that leads us down. And although I think the intention is good, I think the intent is great because, hey, it sounds fantastic. Everybody gets food. Everybody gets equal pay across the board. Everybody gets equal health care. I love the idea of equality, so it sounds like a great thing to sell, but the simple question of, you know, who's going to pay for it? Where's this value going to come from? Why are they incentivized to work if they're going to all be treated the same way across the board? There's no incentive for anybody to do anything, to anybody to create. So I love the idea. I appreciate the discussion. I think that you're wrong, but I encourage you to go and learn a little bit about economics, I think that would help you out a lot in understanding these arguments and taking it just one step further than saying, well, shouldn't somebody have free healthcare? Yeah, that's nice, but that's simply, it's the same as saying, shouldn't everybody have $1 million? Like, yeah, it's a great utopian idea. It comes down to the practicality of it. And that is, I think, the big hole in your argument. Please, if you are interested in the Libertarian Party of Nevada, go to lpnevada.org. And check us out there. You can find stuff on me if you want at TyusFrantz.com, which is my website, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I am at TyusFrantz on Facebook, /TyusFrantz, so basically everything. And please go to our mixers, go to our events, engage with me online. I'd love to have a conversation with you. This particular post was just a little bit too long to respond to in text, and you know what, maybe too long to respond to an audio format. If you have any feedback about the show, email us at podcast@lpnevada.org, and please go to that website to see how you can get involved. If you want things to change, if you want to be a part of that conversation, then there's nobody stopping you. We would love for you to be a part of the conversation. I'd appreciate having you there with us. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.